Dr. Rogers?
Yes, I'm waiting for you.
This is libation to the ancestors. Yes, all that are listening, hear your spirits. Si fa zote zemnikwa, wa zewa kale. All praises due to the ancestors. Si fa zote zemnikwa, mumba. All praises due to the Creator. All praises due to the Son. And the Son's Son. All praises due to the ancestors. To our ancestors, I offer you the most precious life-giving force, a bowl of fresh healing water. I have a bowl of water right here. I offer this to my ancestors who kneel before the divine, and this gives power to them. May I receive power. May we receive power. I give thanks to those commissioned by the divine. We're recognizing ancestors who kneel before the divine to work on our behalf. We're invoking ancestors to come and be with us in this program as we serve and help to heal our people. I invite those now that are listening and participating to call on your ancestors. I'll start with mine. Dorothy Johnson, Benjamin Johnson, our freedom fighters, Harriet Tubman, Denmark Vesey, Nat Turner, Toussaint Louverture. I open it up for others to call on the ancestors.
Earl and Rosa Otis, Gertrude Timmons, Ashe. Gifford Rogers, Catherine Ashe. Katz, Marcus Garvey.
Ashe. Come on, let's call on our ancestors. Bring them on in. Ashe. Ashe. Yo, Hagler. Ashe. Ashe. Ashe, Ashe, oh. Dr. Rogers.
All right, thank you.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Shem Hotep, to all of you, my sisters and brothers, good afternoon and welcome to the Black Reality Think Tank. I am your host, William Rogers. We are so happy that you've been able to join us this afternoon. We have a very dynamic and wonderful program with a beautiful guest who is going to share with us in a conversation in the empowerment of our community. So we're going to get right into discussion now. And at this point, I am going to introduce to you my co-host, as well as the producer of this program, who has done a marvelous job of pulling things together. And we appreciate her so much. Ms. Bonisua Ayan. Good afternoon, Ms. Ayan. Ms. Ayan, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. Mm-hmm.
Hey, good evening, brothers and sisters, African people. How's everybody doing? Okay, the first thing I've got to ask is for everyone to mute your phone. All movement, all noises that you make will be picked up, so please mute your phone. Ashe, everybody heard that?
I think you're good. You're good.
Okay. Just hearing more noise. Okay, so moving forward, I have to say I am so grateful and honored to have a guest on today, our guest, and that's Dr. Nana Mawia Kambone. We're in some crazy times, maybe a little more crazy than it's been over the past 400 years. Maybe there's no comparison, but we need I want to talk a little bit about our sister Nana Mawia, because I want to get right to her. She has so much to offer us. And before I do that, Dr. Rogers, I want to apologize in public. Dr. Rogers normally does an ancestor profile, and because of a misunderstanding on my part, we weren't able to do that. And so I want people to know that that's on me. The reason that you didn't hear the ancestral profile, because Dr. Rogers always says we must praise the bridges that brought us over. But in that spirit, I will just mention a few of the black psychologists before I get back to Dr. Mawia that have taught us and helped to open our people's eyes to the impact of Caucasian oppression, pathology, and trauma that has affected us so deeply generation after generation. So names that pioneers, just a few, because there are many, Dr. Amos Wilson, some are in the ancestral world and some are living now, Dr. Naeem Akbar, Dr. Bobby Wright, Dr. Joy Leary, Drs. William Greer and Price Cobbs. And I want to mention Maladoma Somme, who's written a book that's about what African culture really looks like, what we really come from. Hello?
You're there.
Okay, I see a number up on my phone. The phone keeps beeping. Of course this happens when we start the program. But anyway, so these are some that I wanted to mention. Now, to get to our wonderful guest, Nana Mawia Kambone. Nana, is it okay that I call you Nana, or shall I call you Doctor? Because it's kind of ingrained in my head.
Whatever suits you, it's fine.
Okay, I say, because Nana's going to come out. but when I think about Nana Maria Cambon, Dr. Cambon, and I was thinking about the words that just came to my mind, the words integrity, beauty of spirit, and beauty of the physical woman, sincerity, being a gift to us, a healer, love, and a real revolutionary. That's what I want to say about my personal experience with this true queen, and that's why I'm so grateful to have her on. So.
Well, let me first say thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Yes, absolutely, absolutely. You're more than welcome. You're more than welcome for what you are doing for us. So speaking of what you're doing for us, I'd like to start with telling our community who you are, what you do, and anything else that's for us to know about you.
Well, thank you. And, of course, you heard our sister, Bonice La, introduce me, but I'd also like to just, before I talk about myself, add a piece that this noted psychologist and like minds that contributed, like Dr. Asa Hilliard, like even Francis Cress Belving, the psychiatrist, was still part of our family. And many others who, you know, there's some well-known and some not so well-known. And we want to ensure that we lift them up, because those of us who are still doing this work, and as you mentioned, only those people are not in it. But those, they're still the shoulders that we stand on. And so we cannot move forward without acknowledging that. And one other that's still in our midst is Dr. Bobby Ray Noble, there's a host of others, and we give thanks to all of them.
Ashe?
So I would like to talk, what do I say about myself? As you have heard, our sister, Vanisla, calls me Nana and Dr. Cambon, and I'm also known as Mama Maria. So even though it's Nana Efia, most, including my grandchildren, call me Nana Maria, the name given me by my lifetime mate, Baba Kamau, was Maria, which translates to essence of life, because that's how he perceived me as we came together. And so I'm engaged in trying to do my purpose here, my inkarabi, try to fill in my destiny, which I think is to be a helper and a servant to our people. And that is portrayed in many ways. So Dr. Maria is a clinical psychologist. Nana Efia is a traditional practitioner of African tradition. Mama Maria sees herself as an activist and a mother of our people. And so that's some of the titles that I claim. The work I do is a combination. I see myself as a holistic practitioner. Practitioner probably is not the best word, but as Anissa called healer, I think that's not, that's also a misnomer, because I'm not the healer. I facilitate the healing with others. And so I can't claim what belongs to the spirit in the but I try to facilitate that process. In the work we do, I try to bring all of that together. The name of my organization, my company, is Onipa, which is spelled bold, N as in Nancy, I as in Ice, P as in Peter, A as in Africa. Onipa.com is the URL where I present the works that I do as a psychologist, traditional cure to the public. And so I have this website in which I also do guided meditation, which is part of my practice, movement therapy, many different forms that make it much more African-centered than psychological. And so we are trained in academy that does not speak for us or about us. And as we move through this, we have to reclaim that which feels for us. So UNIPA, Psychological and Consulting Services, attempts to do that, not only for individuals, families, and couples, but also for industry, because we have to realize that we have to have healing spaces not only in our homes, but in our workplaces as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of it. And then recently we launched Black Therapy Central. And in May we had a town hall, state of emergency town hall, where we brought together people from around the globe to talk about and to give license to the issues that we face as a people. In fact, Elliot and Richard played some of that on Time for Awakening for us, and we encourage people to go back because it is on YouTube to be able to pick up, and hopefully I think it's done on a BB2, which is the only and largest community university in the world, and that's abibitumi.com. So that, the state of emergency for our people was there. We looked at mental health, physical health, education, economics, sustainability. We looked at politics, the media, and we looked at our ancestral realm to see many dimensions that create who we are. And so that was a great success, and it was followed by a 10-day healing journey where we help people look at or experience or be exposed to different ways to think about and go about. As you know, there's such a stigma against getting help, especially mentally, that because our people are only exposed to one way of seeing it and knowing about it. So the 10-day healing journey assists people to think about healing differently from an African center. So that's primarily the work we do, and that 10-day journey is built on blacktherapycentral.com. It's blacktherapycentral.com. We encourage you to go. You have to register, but it's free to get in. We encourage you to do that. And so we've been launching those, and also with Black Therapy Center, we are also coming on the Time for Awakening Media. We started last night to announce the programs that we will be presenting on, and we have a team of psychologists and others who we will be interviewing and doing podcasts about regarding the emotional and healing needs of our people. So that, again, will be on the Time for Awakening Media at 8 p.m. on Monday night. So that kind of fills my plate.
I see it's a full plate. And it's a beautiful plate. We are in, for me, such desperate need for healing. And that's why I'm so excited about this. You know, Black media, what Dr. Rogers, Brother Elliot, and the rest are doing, and now with you on, I just see some tremendous potential now for our community.
Beautiful.
Likewise.
Yes, yes. So is there anything else you want to share with us, or shall I move on to the questions?
Oh, please. One of the biggest things, as we mentioned those psychologists, I have to give a shout out to the Association of Black Psychologists on the show, because many, if not all of those people, I experienced through there. And we again started the Association of White Psychologists started because there was a recognition that white psychology did not work.
So critical. I'm having a little bit of trouble hearing you, but I can hear you. I just can't hear you as clearly. So again, I want to ask everybody to mute their phone if they're not talking. So, Dr. Nana Maria, want to get into some issues, and I want to have enough time for people that are calling in, hopefully, that want to ask questions, make comments, because, again, I believe that this is the critical issue of our time, dealing with the stuff that we've internalized. We've had an open enemy for centuries, and little by little, we're becoming our own enemy, let's say generation by generation, and that has to be healed. So I want to start off this conversation with talking a little bit about white pathology. There's something going on now that's not abnormal, but it's a little it's ramped up, and that is the blatant targeting of black males by not just police, white vigilantes, neo-Nazis. That movement, the neo-Nazi movement, is growing exponentially. Lynchings, open lynchings, are beginning to occur again. They're finding black men hanging from trees across the nation. And then you have these Karens, as they call them, these white females that call the cops on black men that are going into their own houses or their own apartments or whatever, and accusing them of whatever in hopes that the police will attack them. And so it's open season on black folk. And this is very, very serious. And we're seeing it. Fortunately, we can see it now. So we don't have to convince anybody of anything. And I'm not even talking about whites, but just us who may be in denial. It's open season. And I want to ask you, what message is being sent to us? And why now? Because these things are extreme. Watching this stuff on media is extremely traumatizing. And for the first time in my lifetime, black folk are talking openly about feeling traumatized and trauma. So why is this happening right now? And what message is being sent to us?
So your question is three parts, and so let me address that. I don't want to miss the trauma. You talked about white pathology having been here for centuries, and it has. So that hasn't changed. And that we see the targeting of black males, they intend to and want to create a race war, because as we know, there are 10 times more guns in this country than there are people. And that's every single individual, million of them. There are 10 times, and the majority of those guns are in the hands of those people you mentioned, the police, the vigilantes, the neo-Nazis, all of those people. So if they're arming themselves to the teeth like that, what does that mean for us? It means that we have to realize that there is a war going on, and that we have to prepare ourselves to fight. And that we cannot tremble in fear. We have to find the inner strength to face on. Now, am I suggesting that we go toe-to-toe, you know, when there might be 100 of them to 10 of us? No, that would be suicide. But we have to begin to prepare ourselves. And later on, we may talk about some ways to do that. But in understanding what's going on, Dr. Francis Cresswell thing mentioned that they are afraid of being annihilated by the fact that we keep giving birth. And in that, they know that they're leaving this planet, but they're not going to leave it to us. So if we look at Black Wall Street, Rose Winner, nothing did black people do against white people. They just have this inbred hatred that they, and they have written it in their little laws that they will never allow black people to rise in this country. And so we keep trying to create a space, usually next to them, so that they can see we're not bad people. But you can't change the mindset of people who intend to hate and intend to kill. So you got, we talk about racism a lot, but we are now only beginning to talk about murderers. Murders that have been sanctioned even by our government. Wall Street was not bombed by individual vigilantes. And they're quick to point that out, that 300, at least 300 of our people died in that massacre. But it was bombed by the government. It was sanctioned to be bombed by the government. We saw in even milder ways during the Civil Rights Movement when the government sent the FBI to watch but not intervene in the attacks against black people, in the attacks against both. We know that, you know, there was an ex-Confederate who started up the massacre of Wilmington, North Carolina. Nothing ever happened to him. And yet, there is discussion about protecting Confederate monuments that give praise to the deeds of these men and women, that there are whole societies, you know, like Daughters of the Revolution, who sponsor and support and give money to these. We know that when cops kill black people, that they can count on receiving millions of dollars from their white counterparts to say thank you. These kinds of things are happening, yet, and as you talked about, Trump, part of the intent is to traumatize us. So we, if we think about the enslavement period, and prior to that, even coming over, in the dungeon of Ghana and along the West Coast, where our people were held, the most horrendous torturing occurred. Yet, these were intended to be property and product for them. You would wonder what kind of mind would destroy the very product that they were trying to sell. But they wanted to destroy the mind so that we would be submissive. The same act occurred on the plantation, where our people were hung, where women were raped, where their bellies were cut open and babies' heads crushed in the ground. It was to make us submissive to them, to have us have it in our DNA, flowing through our veins, witnessing that kind of incredible savagery, so that we would not rise up collectively against it. So trauma began then. But I don't want to just talk about that without talking about the thousands of Africans on this soil who began to rebel on these plantations. So we talk about these rebellions now as new, and it bothers me to see some young people that we are not like our ancestors on their chest.
Yes, yes.
Yes, they are not, because they're not as strong as Araminta Harriet Tubman, as the Somers in Louisiana, as the many plantation, as a Nat Turner and a Denmark Vesey and a Gabriel Prophet, who planned to get freedom. They didn't ask anybody for it. They did not ask for a proclamation.
That's
and it
right.
was only because of their rebellion, their rising up, that Abraham Lincoln signed that deed and said, if I had any other choice, I would not sign it. So, you know, there are It is not just individuals, white people against us. Even though we have people who look like us in Congress, in the government, the laws, the policies that are written that are supposed to assist us do nothing, because you cannot make people do what they're not going to do. Ask the Native American indigenous people about the number of treaties that were signed, probably 100, and ask how many were carried out. To this day, none. So why then do we think that we can ask the laws to protect us by people who have no intent on doing?
Nana, this level of truth-telling is literally blowing my mind. Because as much as we talk, I don't hear the depth of truth-telling as much as I would like to. And I'm eating up every word that you're saying, because it's the raw truth. No sugarcoating. No, I hope, and we're imagining a new world. That stuff sickens me. So I just got to think, because I'm over here just shaking my head, and I'm sorry for saying woo and teaching it, but that's just how I feel. That's how I feel. And this is how we do it. That's how black folks deal, like call and response. So while you were talking, I was thinking about all of the people that are so invested in voting. I mean, we're inundated with messages to vote. And I was talking to you earlier about a level of dependency. We were talking about level of dependency where many black folks, from the politicians and church folk, and I don't want to lump everybody in any, you know, particular category, but how some say things like, well, We know they hate us, but we're going to love the hate out of them. What kind of mindset is that?
One who loves their oppressor. So you can't love people who love the hate out of people who don't even know that there's a problem with what they're doing. They don't feel there's a problem with what they're doing. And if that strategy worked, we would not still be in the situation we are in. There's so much love that comes from the hearts of black people. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't have the challenges we have, too. But I certainly would not like to spend a lot of energy on that, because I think that's a misdirection for us. It's a very passive way. And I think, given what's happening to us, at this point, it was Ida B. Wells, and I can't quote her exactly, but she says that in order to be free, every, what she called us at that time, Negro needs to honor a Winchester rifle in his house.
That's right.
So that's Ida B. Wells, the teacher, you know, who understood fighting lynching, that you cannot fight someone who's out to kill you with love. You have to have something much more powerful than that, something they will understand. So at the same time, I'm saying, yes, we may need to defend ourselves with weapons, but we have more powerful weapons that we must employ, that are the way we do things, not the way they do. Those things that they use were developed and manufactured over time. Our strength, our power is greater than that and has been since we've been on this planet.
When we get to the place where we talk about what we need to be doing at this time more specifically, I would definitely want you to ask me to elaborate on that. Our power. I am familiar with some of it, and I've been talking about it for a while, and I think you could do a much more effective job than me. So on the one side, we're, in the time that we're in now, on one side we have white pathology and their culture of violence coming at us in every which way. And then on the other side we have, I don't like to use the term black killing black, but young black men are shooting each other. There are children that are dying. I'm sure people have heard about a couple of eight-year-old girls that were hit with bullets and killed, and, you know, this is happening. Now, initially, you know, I'd hear about it and, you know, get angry or have whatever reaction, then I'd move on. Last week, and I called you, last week I walked out of my door to see police cars and yellow tape, you know, near my house, and in asking what happened, there, long story short, there were five shootings of young black males shooting at each other. I don't know how many died, but certainly five had been shot in my neighborhood where typically things like this don't happen. And then after that, I heard Ricky Smiley. I don't really listen too much to, you know, a lot of those things, but the brother's daughter was shot. And it just really hit me that this is something that we have to deal with. We cannot ignore this one. So what is your response to this aspect of what our young people, what's happening to our young people, basically? What's causing our young people to do this level of destruction where they're pretty much carrying out what the European has been doing to us, shooting and killing?
Wow, that's a whole probably workshop, eight-hour workshop to really address it seriously. But one of the things we have to look at what contributes to that. We want to blame the victim, the young black man. What contributes to his mentality, the aggression, the hatred, is the destruction of the family, which began in our enslavement. But even after that, even after our enslavement, our people ran all over the country to find their mate and reconstructed the family system and the family values that had always been a part of us since we've been on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was another movement to destroy the family in the 60s when they, you know, because the Depression didn't do it to us. You know, being poor didn't do it to us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these mass murders at Rosewood and Tulsa and other places didn't do it to us. So they had an intentional plan. The first plan of which, oh no, there's so many. So one, we talk about social welfare and the institution that started to move fathers out of home, because they could not make enough money to support their families, so women started going on welfare. And at the beginning, you couldn't have a man in the house and get aid from the state as well. So there was so much dysfunction around that began to seriously erode our family structure. You know, what family has any worth without having a man?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that takes nothing away from our mothers, who are the ultimate divine beings on the planet. But we are meant to be a pair. You know, that is where life comes from, the combination of a black man and a black woman, to create all that will continue for generations and generations. So I said that's one major thing. But the eugenics with Margaret Sanger and all of them also was a major emphasis to intend to kill us. So people are happy, you know, about being able to have abortions and planned parenting. But they need to go read her biography and her statement. Her intent was to destroy and kill black people. So Planned Parenthood has never been a friend and it doesn't help you plan parenting. The Creator does that. It happens naturally, a lot of times without our even anticipating, because we've also lost our morality and understanding of how to love each other.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing that contributes. In general, you know, our people don't get nurturing from the home, nourishment from food and drink. We don't even know the foods that we should be having to nurture us, to nourish us, to keep us alive. And so we're eating in this food desert because there are not proper grocery stores. But even when there are grocery stores, there's been a campaign to put the worst foods in the black community.
That's right.
And so I remember being riding in New York and listening to the radio that they had a recall of milk that was on its way to Long Island that was supposed to be going to Brooklyn. So why do you need to recall milk? So, you know, you don't have to think deeply about something. They tell you what they're doing. We just refuse to open our eyes, open our ears, and listen. What else contributes is the medication. Putting three-year-olds on medication for whatever makes no sense. If the child has a deformity that might come from childbirth, then the mother obviously has not done something in that period to ensure that this child could come out whole and healthy. And it's not just internally, but in terms of the environment as well that contributes to the development of that child in the womb. The medications, the vaccines that come thereafter, we have no idea what they have been putting into our children. And I have to say that, you know, I have three grown children. The oldest one, I wasn't aware enough, so she got some vaccines. But the younger two have never been vaccinated because I would not put these toxins into it. And this is not coming from me, Dr. Maria Kamba. You can go on the web and read psychiatrists against vaccines, mothers against vaccines, things that destroy who we are. And, you know, I need to stay on point, but I have to do some of this background so that we understand what's contributed to it. So with the male outside of the home, we have now a flood of mothers who have to take care of these children alone. Also contributing to this is the prison industrial complex. The largest prison in the world is Angola Prison, which is a major plantation. From Angola Prison, farms are maintained. Your industries like McDonald's, like Walmart, like Target, like some of the banks, some of the airline industries use prison labor that they don't have to pay for to be able to run their corporation. And so you can look at Let's Buy Black 365, go on that site and see a partial list of companies engaged in the prison industrial complex, including Starbucks, which many of us like to go and participate in. And by contributing in these corporations and these stores, et cetera, you are helping to buy some of the bullets that these young people are using, some of the bullets that these police are using against. So we're contributing to our own destruction unknowingly, and we need to know. Back to the youth. All of these things are problems that contribute to a decaying society. And in many ways, that's what's happening to us. If our youth, our babies, are pulling up guns against themselves and us, then where is our future? What contributes to that is we talk about, you know, the strong black mother, et cetera, But as I said, it takes a village to raise one child. It takes a mother and a father to raise our children. And that's not what these young people have. If they have, you know, obviously they're born from a man. So they have had biologically a mother and biologically a father. But I've talked to many young people whose mothers haven't been there when they don't have a father. Whose mothers are on drugs. Who are out partying, who are out seeking love, who are out trying, working, trying to do things. So we have the good part where they're trying to create a healthy environment, but they're not there, and there's nobody else there.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the other, the pathology, where the mothers aren't there, and the children get to see that. So children don't, some children don't get to learn what love is. They don't get to learn what learning is. All they get to do is try to survive. I've talked to young brothers on my street where I do my job who have said that they've been in the street since they were 16, 7 years old just trying to find food. So how do you think that these young people aren't going to turn against them when we weren't there to love, protect, and teach them from that young? So if they're in the streets at 67, that means they were locked in the house or in the house alone for many of those years before that. Many of them being raised by older sisters, and sometimes those older sisters were only 2 or 3 years older than they. Frustrated, trying to do what needs to be done, they grow up with a lot of things until they become numb. So that's part of it, but we have to also, as I mentioned before, you got to follow the dollar, follow the money. Who benefits from a society of people who is like who can't protect themselves even from each other, who can't thrive because those who have the money have their intent to ensure that we don't follow the money. None of these black youth manufacture or have the money to buy these stuff. There was a time in New York, I recall, that we came over NPR, and we might be able to find the article, when there was an abandoned train, what do you call those, you know, a car, train car.
You mean a railroad car?
A railroad car.
Mm-hmm.
Left and abandoned in a railroad yard that was full of weapons. The railroad yard being adjacent to the black community. It was left there for days. Eventually, black kids and men, in particular, went and got those guns. And there was never anything said about it.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you think put those guns in that train car?
Mm-hmm.
Black people don't ship anything in. They didn't have the money to buy them, they were given to them.
Yes.
So that they could. And so then what happens with these gangs at all is that these young black men, children, don't realize that some of their members are paid to maintain that identity.
Could you repeat that, Donna?
There are infiltrators in these gangs that try to create this decadent and destructive way, and so everybody that looks like us is not our friend. So consistent with that, and I was telling you about this last night on the public radio, they talked about this brother from Syria who was a member of the Child Army. And the Child Armies are raised to just kill. And they take them young, give them no love, brainwash them so that they become nothing but hate, so that they can go out and kill without consideration that these are their own people that they are killing. Those are child hunters. I compare that to these gangs that we have here. What they found out was that a whole group was sent to rescue them. And they said, they didn't want to be rescued. They didn't know they needed to be rescued. What are you rescuing us from? They were surviving and thriving in this, what we would call a hell. And when they rescued them and took them to the camp to deprogram them, to try to give them love, et cetera, he said what their action was to burn up the beds and burn the place down. Who are you trying to help? We didn't ask you for that. That was their attitude. And that's somewhat the attitude that our young people are having. Where have you been? Mm-hmm. Nobody's said anything to me or done anything for me. I have to survive, and it's survival of the fittest, and I'm going to be the fittest. That's the mentality of most of them. We can't say that they can't be saved, but the tactics that we're using by throwing money at that program is not the answer.
That's right.
I met a couple, a young couple, who walked the streets, taking in homeless children, giving them a place, getting a building that they took over so that, and these were young people. How many people are willing to go to that length? How many young people who are in the street wouldn't even trust people coming into their communities? So those kinds of things are necessary to begin to think about how we deal with it. One of the, I don't know if it was you, somebody told me about a young man who killed another young man, just because he had parents.
Yes, I told you about that. Mm-hmm.
Or just because he has a pair of shoes. I mean, the level of menticide within these young people is potent.
Yes.
And the solution must be equally as potent and powerful. The solution is not to blame the victim, but also we cannot tolerate this behavior. And not tolerating does not mean sitting in your house and asking the police or others to take care of the problem. It's our problem. And the solutions must come from us getting together and figuring it out. And there have been groups, that have gone around and talked to and have rapport with many gangs to keep them from some of that. But until we have complete power, which includes power of self, of our minds, and economic power. People always want to go to the dollar first, and that's why I did. Because you have to have a mentality to know what to do economically and politically, and I don't mean voting. I mean, how do you structure and develop your systems to protect you and to organize you in ways that we can continue to, we have to get beyond surviving. We have to be able to thrive and live, which means we have to know how to protect ourselves, how to develop for ourselves, how to move, how to have an economy that works for us, how to have governance that works for us. These are things that are not new to us. These were thousands of years ago we knew and did these things.
Okay.
And it's still in our DNA. We have to figure out what we need to do and not focus on the distractions that they continue to give us.
1 year ago.
Hello?
Yes, I heard someone, so I wanted to stop and not to run with it.
Mm-hmm. Let me just get Dr. Rogers.
Yes, yes.
We have a couple of minutes before we go to the top of the hour.
Yes, we do.
Okay. So, Nana, we're going to go to a break in a couple of minutes, but I just wanted to say, when you talked about those guns being put in trains and left in our neighborhoods, there was, in 1994, I watched a documentary that laid that whole situation out. And not only was, I think crack was put in railroad cars first. And they were delivered to, this happened in California, I think Compton or one of those places. And the train sat there until the brothers that, you know, were standing on the corner in the hood, train sat there for a while, and the brothers finally said, hey, you know, this is just sitting here. Let's go see what's in there. And the car was full of crack. And then maybe a couple of weeks or so afterwards, the guns came in that you're talking about, the same thing. I've heard about Chicago where brothers were finding boxes of guns in alleyways. So people are taught, and by the way, this documentary, politicians, even police, teachers, community members, everybody confirmed that this thing happened because it was so horrific and caused so much damage and chaos in this particular area. So, yes, they go to any lengths to do these horrible things. And the other thing I want to make a comment on, just to emphasize how important it is for us to not blame these babies. They've got to change, but they didn't, as Donna's saying, they didn't get this way by themselves. And in my experience, working with black males for years, it's taken me a while to get through some walls. But when I get through the walls, they just want love, like normal human beings. And we're seeing, a lot of us now are seeing our young males like they're not even normal human beings anymore, like they're the enemy, like they're something that needs to be locked away. And inside, these are young babies that just want love. And like you said, if you approach them correctly, those walls, most of the time, in my experience, they've come down. And they've cried, young men have cried. First, they cussed me out. What you care about me for? You don't know me. You know, and I just kept talking, kept trying to love them, and eventually, the walls come down. So, this is just so deep. I know it's headed toward the top of the hour now, so I'm going to stop. But thank you. We're going to go to Dr. Rogers, Nana, rather, and then continue on.
Okay, we'll take a break here.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people what they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Greetings, my sisters and brothers. We are back. I am your host, William Rogers. We are having a dynamic and very rich conversation with Sister Bonisa Ayan, who is our producer for tonight's program, and Dr. Cambone. Very, 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 very rich program. I'd just like to call attention to our listeners who may be listening via the internet. This is a call-in format. Very shortly, Sister Ayan is going to ask to have our lines open so that some of you who are listening can call in and offer your suggestions or questions for Dr. Cambone. Our number is area code 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. The Black Reality Think Tank airs every Tuesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Time. We are operating on the platform of timeforanawakening.com, which is a part of the blacktalkradionetwork.com. And all of our programs are archived, and you will be able to go into our archive at the conclusion of this program and listen to it again and pass it on to your friends and your neighbors and your loved ones who may not have had an opportunity to listen at the time of its broadcast by going into the portal at www.timeforanawakening.com. www.timeforanawakening.com, and just pull down the Black Reality Think Tank and a program will be posted there. And as I said, you can pass it on to others. This is a very rich discussion. We must all listen and talk and continue this conversation in our own private lives. The Black Reality Think Tank family has three other programs that it produces. One program airs on Thursday evenings from 6 to 8 p.m. Central. That program is produced by a young group of African-American women millennials who call themselves After Seven, and they are offering a dialogue about family and relationships and children and jobs and some of those things that impact their lives as young millennials. And then on Saturday from 3 to 5 Central Time, we have a program called Black Woman Speaks, The Place Where You Can Breathe. And that program is hosted by Sister LaWanda Chambers and Leola Williams. And they also follow in the same tradition, talking about family and relationships and community, and obviously those things that we can do to institute change as well. And then on Saturday evening from 6 to 8, we have Brother Alfonso Watkins, who is a psychotherapist, and the name of his program is the Sankofa Elders Council, speaking through the ears and eyes of our ancestors. And that is a very dynamic program as well. So those are our lineup for the Black Reality Think Tank. And then on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, right here at timeforanawakening.com, we have a program called African Perspectives. That program airs from 11 to 1 Eastern Time. It broadcasts out of Atlanta, Georgia. And the host of that program is Brother Oshiemi Adelabu. It's called African Perspectives, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 to 1. And then finally, We have other programs, and I'm so happy to know about the program that's coming up with Dr. Cambone and that group on Monday evenings. And I hope to make sure, Dr. Cambone, you can announce that again very carefully so that our audience can see that. And I'm sure that that will be a powerful discussion as well. But Brother Elliot, who is the director for the Time for an Awakening Network System, they have a program that airs on Friday from 8 to 10 Eastern Time. They are broadcasting out of Philadelphia. And also on Sunday from 7 to 10, Time for an Awakening. Brother Elliot, Brother Richard. Dynamic conversation, interviews with some of the very powerful elders and statisticians and historians and economists and sociologists in our community, offering the same kinds of dialogue that we are doing here this evening. So with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Sister Ayan, who is doing a super marvelous job. And when you give me your cue, Sister Ayan, I can open up for your audience to speak as well. So thank you so much.
Okay. And I want to take this opportunity to thank you, Dr. Rogers, for opportunities that you're giving the community.
Oh, yes.
Myself, always the work that you do. You're one of the people that I truly love and respect and admire for what you're doing for our people.
Thank you so much. And same for you as well. Thank you.
Ashe. And also to the Black Talk Network and Brother Elliot and Baba Oshie, just all those that are doing the work, using media to assist our people in knowledge and healing, is just so critical. So I give thanks to all. I give thanks to all. Dr. Muia.
Yes.
So you've blown me away for the past hour. I love truth tellers. I can say that 1,000 times. So I want to address a couple of other issues and then open up the lines. Is anybody waiting, Doc?
No, you go right ahead, Dr. Sister Ayan, and then we'll open the lines up whenever you cue it. Right now, a lot of the lines are closed. They are muted.
Okay, very good. Okay. So, with all of the truth telling, the straight up, no nonsense truth telling that you've done today, my question is, can we actually make anything work for us in this country where we have an enemy that's hell bent on destroying us, even if it means destroying themselves? They're in the process of destroying their own children, and have been so. And that's one of the reasons I see that young whites are involved in this Black Lives Matter movement. A lot of these people have been, you know, crapped on by their own. They're eating the horrible foods and getting the cancers. They're stuck in student debt. So I've seen in many ways that they're turning against their own because they're being abused and oppressed by their own. So these are, you know, people who truly don't care about humanity. So, and it's even not a matter of not caring, who are willing to destroy humanity and have been. So can we make anything work in this country, for real? Can we thrive? You talked about thriving and living.
So, you know, there are a lot of theories about how that can happen. And I just want to touch on a couple. You know that there's a theory about separation, you know, from them. And there's a theory about repatriation to Africa. And there's always those who figure that, you know, why can't we all just get along? And so, you know, touching on the two that are probably, let me just dismiss why can't we all get along, because we've had more than 2,000 years with them, and they don't want to get along with us.
Okay.
And so why do we keep begging for someone who hates you to love you?
Right.
So that's a slave master, slave mentality. Mm-hmm. So then they want to talk about the pointing to the ones who are not like that. And maybe that one isn't, but will their child not also be? You know, and so there's, you know, that I'd like to just put aside and think about the other. So we repatriate to Africa. There's a call for building an African power base that we know in the AU, the African Union, that those of us who are in the diaspora, that all around the world except Africa, are in the six regions. My view on that is that the six regions have to organize itself and to become a power base, because the only nations that respect anybody are the people that are bound to nations.
Yes.
And so that's one aspect. And we also know that everybody doesn't want to move to Africa. So what happens here if we're in this cesspool? One, you better get yourself ready to fight, because the fight is coming, and it's coming sooner than later. No, you're not going to have to talk about years. It's coming. And so you're going to have to fight. But also you need to be developing, you know. So we would sit around and listen to folks who, you know, focus on the weapons. Well, yes, you have to defend whatever it is you're going to build. But we also need to start building it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that we need to begin to construct communities like the compounds, you know, in Africa. But of course, you know, based on the new awareness of development and technology, so that people can look at what homes should look like, not what they've been given, but what makes sense. Some of these structures that are called houses don't make any sense. They're not warm enough, they're not cool enough, they're not air flowing. In fact, sometimes the houses we live in are contributing to our poor health.
Mm-hmm.
The rugs we put in there, you know, are full of formaldehyde and create all kinds of respiratory illnesses. You know, we don't know how to live naturally anymore in this country, and we need to begin to do that. So there is a group of people who will be there, and that there are collectors who are starting to pull things together and figure out how to do that. So that's a solution for those who want to say you've got to become increasingly aware. So I have to speak on this point, too, because it's so important. You know, people, the media is talking about that people are now, what do they call, conspiracy theories about Bill Gates being a part of this genocidal movement with these vaccines around COVID. And I have to tell our audience, please do not consider it to be a conspiracy.
Could you repeat that, please?
Please do not consider it a conspiracy theory. That you can go online and look at the history of Bill and Linda Gates, the things that they did in Ghana, where they tried to give that Declavera and women started dying. You know, there's a history of Nestle in South Africa that took in formula that killed thousands of babies, taking them off the breast, which is also part of the Planned Parenthood. Understand, go and read his history, Bill Gates' history. He has not just been focusing on computers, but to build an empire, you know. Again, because he's now one of the richest men in the world, build an empire, agreeing with the Rex Eddy plan, and I'm not going to get that to people who have it can get to read it. But this is no accident. And why is the media telling us it's a conspiracy? Because you can't trust the media.
That's
you
right.
Can't trust the major media, CBS, ABC, Fox News, all of those are part of a government system. They're not even allowed, if they wanted to tell you the whole truth and nothing but
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They have to tell you what the government wants them to tell you. And yes, you'll get some pearls from time to time, but sometimes they don't pick up on things. If these young people didn't have these cell phones recording this destruction, Do you think the media would pick it up? They're posting it, which then says, oh, we better get on top of it.
Right.
But you do not trust them.
Yeah, I don't trust
And that's
anything.
Why we need programs like this, like Time for Relations, like Black Talk Radio.
Yeah.
We have to pay homage to Scotty Reed, to Elliot Booker,
yes.
to those people who have the courage to fight for justice by sharing information that you can get nowhere else.
Dr. Rogers,
okay.
I think, ready to open up the lines.
Okay. Again, Dr. Cambone, thank you so much for agreeing to appear on our program this afternoon, this evening. I really appreciate you and the work you're doing. I had a chance to sit in that the conference that you gave, the Zoom conference, and I really enjoyed that tremendously. But a conversation of this nature is very layered, as we all know, and we can go on. And as you talk, I think about so many of the great works from some of our other ancestors, people like Sterling Stuckey, who talked about the slave culture, and Dr. E.E. Thorpe, who wrote the book, The Psychohistory of the Old South, and obviously Dr. J. Carruthers' intellectual warfare kind of thing, and even Sister Carol Anderson, who's doing that work on white rage. Some of those kinds of ideas, and all of this just comes together, you know, it's just so powerful. But there's one area I do want to ask you specifically, and then I don't want to tie up too much because I know there's many people that may have some things they want to say or ask you. I wanted to ask you if you would mind speaking about one of the very divisive behaviors and attitudes a lot of times that we see in our community among each other, is this fight over religion. And the attack sometimes. Now, I know that I'm very clearly I am a part of that school of the great Dr. James Cone, who talked about the power of the historical black church and the role that it played. As we know, many of our revolutionaries operated out of that system. And so what would you say to some of the divisiveness that we see in our community over the clash of what the black church does, doesn't do, should do, would do, could do kind of thing? And it can create some challenges. And I think that maybe somehow or the other we need to find a way to come together. I know Brother Tavis Smiley tried to do the State of the Black Church years ago, brought all the good minds together, Minister Farrakhan, Cone, and so forth. What would you say? What advice would you give to help us bridge some of that gap? Because we can't obviously discard the black church. So what do you think that we need to do and the way we need to look at that?
So when the first black churches were built, they were not built to promote religion.
Right.
They were built as places where our people could go to learn, to read and write, to survive, to plan resurrection. So, you know, there's a difference between what the black church was originally intended for and what it is used for today. What it is used for today was to promote the religion that the slave masters gave us that would keep us subject. And that continued to keep us down. So I say that at the same time, we need all of our people. And some of them are there. You know, a lot of them are there. You find many and many exodus. But still, the majority of people who practice religion are there. So we have two major religions that we practice here in this country that are founded and promoted by our oppressors, be it Christianity or Islam.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are bound under that and have difficulty being free because we believe in those scriptures that tell us we're no good. We try not to read them, but it's in that book.
Mm-hmm.
So who loves you would tell you you're no good unless they wanted to oppress you and keep you down. So I had someone, a relative in fact, ask me to read a particular scripture one time, and even though that's not my religion, I read. So I went to it, and then I said, well, you know, this is saying, apparently there are two books that are the same in the Bible. And so she sent me to the wrong one. She wanted me. I said, but this is here too. When it talked very negatively about what we ain't, almost like we were the beast of the earth. She said, oh, no, that's not the one I wanted to choose. I said, but that's the one my ancestors used. So that you could not try to brainwash me into believing something different from what they've already said.
Mm-hmm.
So why do you want me not to read that? You know. So, yes, there is work, and there has always been work that has been done.
Mm-hmm.
But part of it has led also to our past events. So we can talk about, the great Dr. Martin Luther King and what he went through to try to save us. Why should we accept that these white folks beat him up as a sacrifice for us?
Mm-hmm.
What Malcolm said, if somebody hits me, I'm going to hit him back. You know. And that is the tradition of our ancestors.
Right.
And so, I know just like that abusive mother that child clings to because they don't know any better, that our people aren't going to leave the church on that.
Mm-hmm.
We are bound there for whatever reason. We have to figure out ways that we can work together, but that cannot stop those who understand already how to do it.
Yeah.
If there are those who want to have people hit them on the other cheek, then you can't stop them from doing it. But that doesn't mean you have to allow someone to hit you on the cheek.
Yeah.
Or accept any of the degradatory behavior of people who don't like you. If they want to sit and love in while the police put their knee on your neck, while they whip you, while they rape you, while they cut open the stomachs of your mothers and let these babies fall to the ground,
mm-hmm.
If that's what you truly want to do, then nobody can stop you. But also don't talk against those who would also take that knife, take that gun, take mm-hmm. that whip, mm-hmm. and use it against those who come against
you. Thank you. I like that. Thank you so much. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to open up. We're going to call on some of our guests that I know that are online. I would like to remind you that we really have basically about 45 minutes or less left. So if you could kind of keep your comments short. This is a call-in format, area code 215-490-9832. For any of our listeners on the Internet who would like to call in and ask a question. I'm going to go to my brother who also operates he is the co-host of a program on our system here. Brother Alfonso Watkins, he's also into the psychology work. So, Brother Alfonso, any questions or comments you have?
Hotel family, Hotel, thank you, Baba, for giving me the opportunity to ask the Queen Warrior a question. I truly appreciate the science of how the Queen is articulating the reality that we live in and out of that Black African developmental perspective. But my question is, what we are attempting to do when I think about what our ancestors did in Haiti to defeat the Europeans there, we don't necessarily have anywhere to hide or to cover. So in the kind of information that you're sharing, how do you see us being able to create the environment to repair and heal our people. You gave real critical scenarios about creating the camps, that type of thing. But from the developmental perspective, could you go a little more deeper into the healing attribute, the healing piece that we're going to have to do?
Wow. And I thank you for asking that question. And I think you realize that neither of us got taught this in the academy on our way to get to these degrees. So
right.
One of the things I have to be grateful for is the path that I chose before coming here that would allow me to go through the corridors that I've gone through to begin to acquire some of this information. So one, you know, as an African-centered psychologist, as an African-centered, and I rarely use the word healer because I only facilitate the healing. I am not the healer. I help to facilitate the healing in others. And so there's not a word for that, so I try to steer away from healers a lot. But basically, I truly believe this with all my heart, that we have to go back to our beginnings, take a sample, go back and fetch that which helped us in the past, the essence. That doesn't mean go back and build another pyramid or, you know, run across the Nile, etc. But what is the essence of that which is still written? It's still on the walls. I see a lot of work done by those who are Kemetic scholars and Egyptologists and all, interpreting the words. But you have to have someone who reads the language well to read what's written on those pillars. And they will tell you about the invasion of what they call the Amu. Those were the Eurasians. And they will tell you about the Kemetians. Those were black people. Kemet meant land of the black. And they will tell you how we live and what happened to begin our destruction. And when they tell you how we live, we have examples that we can go to. We can go to the 42 laws of Ma'at. We can go to the seven principles of Ma'at. We can go to read about Ptah Hotep and those works, the what they call, I can't think of the Kemetic title for the Book of the Dead, because I hate to use that. Coming forth by day.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find the essence of who we are. So what does that mean for us? That we may not be able to physically journey there, but those people are in our blood. They are in our DNA. And as Sister Banis will call, I am a practitioner of going back to the foundations of who we are and taking the essence of that to use to help us now and in the future. So what does that mean in terms of talking about Haiti? Haiti realized that they were outgunned by the French. They didn't have all the weapons they had, but what they did have was something more powerful than that. They had their African ancestors within them.
Mm.
And they performed the rituals that would bring that up to defeat the then most powerful army in the world.
Mm.
Without a gun.
Mm.
And they had the will to do it. They had the will to submit to those energies of the universe. And how powerful are they? Look at what's happening all over the world now by nature. Who is sick and tired of us not moving forward to reclaim this planet that they gave us to protect and care for. So she's rising up with the waters and the fires and the winds and the tornadoes and the volcanoes to say enough is enough. Mm-hmm. You're allowing these destroyers to go too far. And if you don't rise up, then we will, which means that then we will also be subsumed under her wrath.
All right. Thank you so much, Brother Alfonso, for your question. Let me go over here to Durham, North Carolina, 919-768. Caller, question or comment?
Yes, good evening, Dr. Rogers.
Good evening, Brother White.
And Sister Benicia and our esteemed guest.
Good evening.
I just want to say thank you very much for your presentation and the understanding of what's happening with our youth and mental illness that they're suffering from, because that's what it is, from the stress and the trauma. And I witnessed that. I had a cousin of mine die when I was around 50 in New York, and we went to the funeral and the burial, and we came back and we were standing out in front of the house, and my cousin was around 19, and he said, "Why did they bury Cousin Jimmy so far?" I said, "Well, that's just the cemetery they put him in." And he said, he was 19, he said, "I'm going to tell Grandma and Grandpa to bury me someplace closer when I die." And I said, "What are you talking about, telling your grandmother and grandfather to bury you?" And he said, "Well, you know how I'm living. I don't have nothing promised to me but death." And fortunately, that time I was member of the UAM, and I started taking him to meetings with me, and it helped him an awful lot. But, you know, a lot of young people just don't see no future. They don't see that anything is good going to happen to them.
All right. Thank you so much, Brother White. Let's go over here to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, 267-333.
Yes, Dr. Rogers.
Yes, sir. How are you?
I'm good, sir, and I like your guest, the therapist. You're doing a good job at the presentation. Sister Benicia, you're doing a great job. You're doing a great job. And I want to say this, that being in the shadow slavery in America, 400 years of it, and to be broken like a cow or an animal or reduced to something they would call subhuman, and you and I know that African man and woman are human beings and told that there's something else. And then to go from that to Jim Crow and look at some of Du Bois writings he talks about in his writings, how the family is falling apart, to now to have come to a place where we see that the devil has no new tricks, that he makes sure that we get steel guns, alcohol, drugs, and disease. And the traps that we in, that in our community, we kill one another, we don't like one another, and we're so open to, if you want to get rich, come to the black neighborhood. You ain't got to live in it. And pull out. Lack of education, the lack of food. My question to you is that if he doesn't have any new tricks, why are we still falling into the trap? And I'll let you answer that. I mean, I myself, just an observer, a shrewd observer, and I want myself and my people to get out of it. But psychologically, we're bound. But I believe that there are many before us, Dr. Muhammad, Booker T. Washington, David Walker, Harriet Tubman, Ida B. Wells. How, if all things became before us, how do we get out of this to go forward?
So I'd like to address that two ways. When you talk about those early ancestors who were able to prosper in the midst of the same kind of thing going on, it's because their minds had not been totally taken. They still understood who they were as a people. We've been here so long, and we had, you know, with integration, even though I was raised in the North and there was integration there already, you know, but we allowed them to take our children. are babies in the school? And what are they doing but destroying their minds? You know, and so, yes, some of us can tweak through and make it through these academies and all, but even the majority of those of us who do that become so wrapped up in their society, we no longer know who we are and what we look like and don't want to be around each other. So the program to wrench our minds from us now has to be a new program to wrench our minds back. And that's a term I take from my husband. We have to wrench our minds back. And you do it through these kinds of programs. But you also have to have food. One of the greatest things about COVID is that they took the children out of the school. Now people say, well, they're not doing very well on these computer learning and things. Learning what? They weren't learning anything anyway. So what, yes, it's unfortunate that all parents may not be able to access the information, but we were sending them, we were sending our children to the dungeon. That's what these school systems are. We are sending them to the modern day dungeon and watching them die,
yes,
mentally, spiritually, and sometimes physically. So they're talking about the children can't get food outside the school. Well, what are they feeding them inside the school? It is the responsibility of the parents of those children. And I'm not talking about the biological parents, because all children belong to all of us. And we have to feed them mind, body, and spirit. And we don't feed them religion.
Yes.
We feed them mind, body, and spirit. We connect them to the spirit within. And all those thousands of years of ancestors that I spoke about who run through their veins, we help them reconnect with them so that they have a true guide from those who can see. And that's a big way to begin to save our race, that there are too many of us over 50 who we have to give up on, maybe even younger than that, who are not going to change and are participating in the destruction of our people for the little crumbs that they give us by allowing us to work their jobs to help them become more rich, while we continue to go down and become poor and poor. So the answer to your question is in part that we have to go back to the foundation of our own spirit and rise from there.
Beautiful. Thank you. Greensboro, North Carolina, 336-638. Question or comment, caller? 336-638. Okay, just listening. Greensboro, North Carolina. I don't have a number. I have a name. Sister Penelope. Question, or are you just listening? Okay, just listening. 414-324. I think I know who this call is. Caller, question or comment? 414-324. Okay, just listening. 414-573. Question? Comment?
Oh, I'm just listening. Dr. Rogers.
No
I
problem.
I find it very interesting.
Well,
I may comment as you go along.
Just thanks so much for doing it. So thank you. Thank you. Let's go down to my brother from New York City. 917-662. How you doing, my brother? How are things tonight?
Hey, Hotep, Brother Rogers, and listening audience. How you doing, brother?
Doing great. So glad to hear from you. Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Yeah. I was listening to them sisters. They're so powerful. And I've always said the answer to our ills lies within our women. And Elijah Muhammad says the race can go no higher than its women.
Yes.
I think if the men would just get out of the way a little bit and let the women handle it, I think we'd be okay. That's just my opinion.
I like that.
But I've noticed who keeps the church together, the women. Who keeps the family together? Grandma. Who keeps the organizations together? It's always the women.
Okay.
So I don't think they get their just due on what they do for us as a people.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. Dr. Cambone, any comments to his statement?
Absolutely, because also this is our time as a people. And it has already been said that it is the black woman who will save the planet. So, but not as we see her not accepting herself as the queen that she is.
Right.
And so we have to call out, just like, you know, it is not less devastating to have our sisters walking around in bikinis on stage and humping the floors and things like that. That is no more, no less destructive than those brothers in the gangs selling drugs and shooting.
I agree. I totally agree.
You are destroying the race.
Right.
When you don't have women who understand that she is a queen.
Mm-hmm.
When she accepts being the doormat to everybody. When she can't show love because she doesn't know love. There is no greater destruction to a race of people than to create women like that.
Right.
And so we have to have, you know, I listened to you list some of the programs that are promoted by sisters, and we have to have programs of women who know who they are speaking to women who are trying to find out who they are.
Yes.
And then also to those who don't know who they are.
Right.
I have women I talk to who, you know, are so-called middle income, who don't want to have to cook. Well, where's the family getting the food from? You know, well, you know, why can't we do equals? Well, part of the problem is we have isolated ourselves into these condos and tiny places where we're no longer in communities of families where people help each other out. So, yes, it takes a whole village to raise a child. And when you isolate yourself so that you can be upwardly mobile, you cut off the line that nurtures the entire family. And so all you have then is what you can buy, but not what you can give. And the nurturing, the medicine, comes through the food.
Yes.
And if you don't want to prepare it for your family, you don't know. We know the old folks would tell you don't eat everybody's food.
Because
there's an energy and spirit in that food.
That's right. That's right.
And so I remember that times when my grandparents fucked, my grandfather wouldn't eat her food. And she would say, good, I got a vacation. Because he didn't want that negative energy from that fuss to be in his food.
Yeah, that's right.
You know? And so we understood that.
Mm-hmm.
We already know that the plant gives us everything we need. And it is those, you know, the African woman was the first spiritual diviner.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't you know that? She was the first one. You can go back to ancient Yemen and see that. And that's because even the word for mother is synonymous with the word for teacher, which is synonymous with the word for nurse. That was how they viewed mother.
Hmm.
And we no longer want to be that mother.
Hmm.
So the destruction of the community is with the women. But also the restoration of the community is with the women.
Right.
And it's our time, and it's time to go out and have rites of passage, not just for the 12-year-olds, but for the 25-year-olds and 30-year-olds, so we can teach mothers, women, how to be mothers, how to be queens, how to be grandma. We need it all. It's a shame that we got 40-year-old grandma.
Yes, yes.
We're hanging out at the club.
That's right. We have Orange City, Florida, 386-216. Are you listening or you have a comment? Orange City, Florida, 386-216.
I have a comment.
Is
Dr.
this,
Rogers?
Is this the caller from Orange City, Florida?
No, this is Milwaukee, 573-1295.
Okay, let me find out if this caller has a good idea. I'll come to you.
All right.
Caller? Okay, just listening. All right, go back. Okay, caller, go right ahead.
Just wanted to make a comment. I really enjoyed this conversation. I think it's so nourishing to me as a woman, and I wish that we could have more of these types of conversations. I noticed that, you know, everything was moving towards, like, the 90s as we were having upward mobility and moving into mainstream jobs. It was really about shopping and wearing the latest fashions and purses, shoes. And so we really began to get hung up on materialism and just having fun or whatever. And then the nails and then the eyelashes. So a lot of these things have taken us away. They're superficial. They've taken us into a pretentious type of mode of being. And then they add the music. And the music is so downgrading to women. And then when there's a lack of men...
Your voice is drifting, sister. It's drifting in.
Can you hear me better now?
No.
Okay. Now can you hear me better?
I can hear a doc.
Okay, good enough. Okay. It's still drifting. All right.
And then, you know, there's the music and the music when, you know, women are calling themselves bitches and feeling good about that and feeling good about their man calling them a bitch. And, you know, and then we move to that frame of mind. And then there's, of course, our role models, our women wearing, like you said, bikinis and dancing on stage. And so that becomes our role model, what we think is going to be acceptable to another man. And so the life becomes very superficial. There's lack of our black men, you know, so the competition is fierce. And then they put on a TV program called, you know, Divas. And so the divas went from being like a divine female to just being a you know, itchy type of female who could be real catty towards another female and be very competitive. So I think that these messages that are being sent to women, a speaker was guest was saying, they're just detrimental to us as a group of people, and because of our financial situation and because of the racism, we oftentimes will find ourselves locked into this mode of thinking that this is the right way to think or to behave.
Okay. That's powerful. That's very powerful. Sister Yan, do you want, you've got about a little less than 15 minutes. Do you want to continue or you want to take it from here?
Well, I'd like to say something about that comment.
Okay, great.
Because I think that we have to take some responsibility for what we do as women. If indeed we are truly the mothers of the planet, then why are we watching those shows? You know, why are we accepting that? Also, again, follow the money. Who benefits from that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was a group, and you can look them up, who found the NWA and said how much they loved them because they were calling themselves the N-word and calling the women out of them. They did, those men didn't look like us, but they wanted to promote that for us. So we have to wrench back our minds if indeed, you know, I think about all the excitement that the black people had over a movie when they got to finally see black people doing something positive for blacks, and that was Wakanda.
Mm-hmm.
That it took a fantasy for us to be able to look at ourselves in a powerful light.
Wow.
That's intentional. Follow the money. you know. And there were, even though they allowed that movie to come forth, they had to tweak it in some ways in order for them to be able to, in order for us as a people to be able to get it on the market. So there was no original white man from the CIA in the original. But in order to be able to get it to market, so, you know, they had a, what we, what they call a blackout Tuesday. I call it a black end, but we should always be buying black. That until we reprogram ourselves by our behavior, not when somebody is looking, but particularly when nobody is even caring, that we do black 365. And so when we can do that, we will begin to believe in ourselves again, and we will not accept anybody calling us other than a queen. And we will treat men as if they were kings, and we will hold them accountable for it. So, yeah, why do we have a lot of black men running to white women? Because they don't have to be held accountable. And they don't act the same when they go. So they don't want her to think of him the way he thinks of himself. So, yes, hold him accountable. And each of us teach. I see a lot of young brothers with some really good heads on who are trying to teach their ladies how to be queens. That's a positive. How to hold herself up like an African queen. I have seen a lot of that lately, but I've also seen resistance. I don't want that African stuff. I'm not in, that's his stuff. So yes, in order for black, for black community, our nation to rise, black women have to walk in their righteous space.
Sister Yan?
Yes, I want to jump back to what integration was mentioned, because I recently got in touch with some feelings that I had when I was in junior high school and was forced out of a black junior high school to an integrated school. My reaction was extreme. I literally played hooky for 2 weeks in the winter, and I sat on a park bench to avoid going to school with white folk. And as I talk to people that are in my age group, and I don't think we, I know we don't talk about this enough, a lot of people in my age group in the early 60s talk about the trauma that they experienced and still experiencing from integrating into schools where we were not wanted. Now, thankfully, in that era, you know, I said this many times, we fought. You know, if white people said anything to us, then, you know, we threw down and we beat the crap out of them. But there still was some damage done by being forced into an environment where you were not wanted. So there's a lot of healing that has to be done. And when Nana talked about, you know, Sankofa, going back and reclaiming that which is ours, I'm a firm believer that our culture, we reclaiming our culture, is what's going to save us or heal our minds. Because, you know, I think about how we've been traumatized and damaged, and, you know, the tremendous amount of work that has to be done. The mind has to be healed in order to do the work effectively. So, and Don, I have a question for you, or a comment, and I'd like your response as we head toward closing. One of the great things that I've seen is that many of our youth and our elders are letting go of those religions that were forced on us in order to pacify us and keep us under control, and going back to our ancestors. I hear so many people making reference to their ancestors and wanting to learn about African spirituality. So that, I'm just hearing that this year in terms of the numbers of people that I just would never even suspect. So you have any comments on that?
Absolutely. You know, so my practice is African-centered, my psychology practice. Mm-hmm. So it's no accident, though, that primarily black women, but the majority of black people who are coming now are talking about the spirit that they feel, that they want to know about, that they know that part of the challenges they're having being separated from themselves has something to do with that, even if they can't call it. And so, yes, there is a movement again. Listen to what I'm saying. This is our time. The spirits are rising to be prepared to assist us, like in Haiti, if we call. But you have to know that that's even a path. See, the Haitians were not that far removed from their African roots at that time. We have gone through enslavement, but even still then, our African traditions still thrive, still survive. Till today, they still thrive and still survive on this continent. And everywhere there's an African people around the globe. So tapping into that spirit, tapping into that knowing about knowing, will assist us on this journey toward reclaiming our way, which is the way, according to Ayikwe Ama in 2003. So, you know, I really thank you for the opportunity to be here, but it is understanding who you are and whose you are as you play Dr. Clark. This spirituality is not, and Baba Wade says, do not call it spirituality, because that's about being spirit. What we are is spirit. We're not about it. We are it. And we have to claim it, because nothing else, this vessel that we walk around with, has a very short lifetime. But our spirit will continue to live as long as those names are called.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anybody else on the line, Doc?
I just wanted to ask Dr. Cabone, could she give us the time of the radio program on Time for Awakening on Monday evening once more? Could you give us that?
Yeah, that program is at 8 p.m.
Okay.
Eastern time.
Right.
And we really look forward to this joint effort to really bring truth to our people. And our program is focused on healing. We have a group of therapists, mostly psychologists, and an elder who is also a psychologist but doesn't do therapy, who have information to share. And in addition to that, because it's holistic, we will also bring people from other healing professions to the floor to talk about why and how we can heal and not to be afraid of anything they throw at us, because we're greater than that.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Ashe. Doc, anything else?
No. Again, I am so honored to have you on our program today. Thank you so much, Sister Ayan, for your initiation and producing this program. And very clearly, Dr. Cambone, I've heard so much about you for so long, and it's so powerful. I know your husband is in the work as well. I've had appreciation for him and some of the things that he's done as well. So I'm just happy that you were able to come and be with us this evening.
Well, I'd like to give a shout-out to some of my work, the ONIPA Psychological and Consulting Service. Again, that's ONIPA, P as in Peter, A. ONIPA Psychological and Consulting Service, ONIPA.com. And please go to Black Therapy Center. We are about to take this to another level, and we need therapists to join, you know, those who can see themselves as African Center know the difference, although we do have other therapists that may not be African Center. And we really want you to follow the work that we're going to do. We're very grateful for this opportunity.
Thank you.
And
absolutely.
Thank both of you.
Thank you.
And what is the Abi Tumi, is it?
Oh, a B.B. Tumi. And that's A, like an apple, B as in brother. I, B as in brother, I. A B.B., which means black. That's the tree word. There's an A in tree word for black. A B.B. Tumi. T-U. T as in Tom. U as in uncle. M as in Mary, I, a B.B. Tumi, ABIDITUMI.com. So a B.B. Tumi is Black Power. And that is a community that my son does, Nana Obadile Tamba, Dr. Obadile Tamba, Nana Kwan. And that is a community that has 10,000 followers. So don't go there looking for a Facebook experience. They're not looking for those kind of people. They're looking for people who want to learn about and want to be black. And so there is a women's group that has formed on there, too, to talk about developing black women. So go on and see that. And we also have our daughter, Natasha Kamban, who has New Business Solutions and Let's Buy Black. New Business Solution, Natachi was the one that formulated Black Therapy Center. And so she brought me into her vision of having a place where black people could be taught by, could be healed by black people. So that was the vision, that we needed a place where black people could heal by black people who knew they were black. And so those are the things that we are doing.
Beautiful. And I want to let our audience know that this program will be rebroadcast in its entirety. You can go to our website at the Black Reality Think Tank Facebook page, and it will be posted there very shortly. And you can listen to this at any point and pass it on to others. So Sister Young, close in.
Okay, I just want to say Asante Sana, thank you so much to everyone. I love my people. I love everybody that was on the line, and I just want to see us go back, reclaim ourselves, so we can get out of this asylum that we're in.
Okay.
And go back to loving and living and thriving.
All right.
And thank you again, Dr. Rogers.
Peace.
And Nana Mawia, thank you. Love you.
Peace to all of you. See you next Tuesday at 7 o'clock.
Good night.